disrupt recruiting processes at the local colleges. We disrupt the recruiting center in Capitola. We make it hard for them to, like, you know, get bodies to wage these wars. We take on corporations like Lockheed Martin locally, and we need to shut them down and get them out of the county. We do tax resistance. There's a variety of things that Sam Farr is useless for.
Thank you. Mike Rutkins.
My view is that where the peace movement needs to go next, and to relate this particularly to Sam Farr, is I think we need to build, through public education, a sense that the majority of people in this community believe that we should not be occupiers in Iraq. I think that's the next issue for us, and that Iraq needs to be rebuilt, a combination of their own internal forces, which will be difficult because of the mess that's been made there, starting with Britain back at the turn, you know, a century ago. But beyond that, the mess that we've made there as well, and the combination of the local forces there and United Nations support, not unilateral U.S. or British and U.S. Imposition of an imperialist relationship with the country. And I don't think the majority of people in our community have strong views about that issue, understand the implications of this. There are some people that get it, others that don't. We have an education job to pull off. And I think if we educate our community about that issue adequately, and that's not by going after Sam Farr, and that's not by direct sit-ins initially and so forth, but that's by putting out literature, by explaining the politics of this, by letters to the editor, again, reaching broad-based ways to educate people about these issues, that'll be the most effective. I think once we have those kinds of views in our community, and we know that that is the majority view, and I'm not sure that it is right now, that we would then be an appropriate place to begin taking direct actions of the kinds that Joe's suggesting, and I support those. Nonviolent, direct civil disobedience actions, which punctuate the strong views about this. But those kinds of actions taken in isolation of a clear majority view in the community are not very effective. People are seen as out of step with what's going on. So I think our main job now is educational. I think we really have to do a lot of hard work, door-to-door work, build the kind of movement that actually speaks to the citizens in this community, not just talk to ourselves in a kind of a sectarian fashion. And I think that's really, really critical. If we're serious about not having an imperialist relationship with Iraq and the rest of the Middle East forever, we need to start getting our citizens involved in understanding what's going on, and that requires us to do some hard educational work.
Thank you, Mike. You're tuned to Free Radio Santa Cruz, 96.3 FM. This is a debate on Sam Farr, bane or boon to the peace movement. In another sense, which way do we go now in Santa Cruz with the peace movement? You're listening to Joe Williams and Mike Rutkin. And Mike, you say you have about 5 minutes left? So if anybody has any questions, they better call in real fast because Rutkin is hightailing it out of here. And what we may do here is give both these...
You should point out to your listeners that Joe's just pulled off his outer shirt and is wearing a T-shirt that says sectarian idiot on it, which I have to say shows a great sense of humor.
I see. Well, we want to get a picture of
once
this.
Once again, I do need to apologize to Joe for having used that comment in the newspaper. Anyway, that's funny, Joe. It's good work.
So we have sectarian idiot, and Mike has a T-shirt, soldiers risk their lives for war. What are you willing to risk for peace? Perhaps an emergency session of the city council to quickly vote on the issue, Mike? Well,
yeah.
That would be nice. I don't think I really got an answer to the question, why didn't the city council act on this issue? Why didn't you raise it at the last council meeting? But sometimes I don't get answers to my questions. I'm looking to see if anybody's calling in. It looks like we do have a caller, so let's let the public speak. Hi there, you're on Free Radio.
Hi, this is Linda. I don't think I'm a big piece of the public, but I have a question. Does it have to be about Sam Farr, who is a Democrat and therefore kind of neutralized?
Yes, we're kind of here on the peace movement or Farr or something sort of connected with that. What do you got in mind? We'll decide if we'll censor you here.
Okay, I've been censored before on your show.
Go ahead.
What I wanted to know is what can be done and how can citizens participate in what needs to be done so that before the police chief is replaced, there are more consistent and relevant policies in place.
Yeah, that's
before the next change of the chief.
You're looking for input on how to deal with policies in the police department before the police chief has changed, or
how to get some policies that are fair-minded, very even-handed.
Fairly speaking, that's not a question for this discussion. But why don't you put it on Mike's answering machine? I'm sure he'll have a strong answer for you later. He's nodding.
Well,
he says he'd be happy to respond. But those who want to buy it.
Okay.
Yeah, I mean, I'm sorry to do that to you, but
problem with Sam Farr is that he's very using bold words now. That as a party, their votes don't mean that much. I think the emphasis on FAR, if you're trying to further Linda, peace movement, suck.
I hear you. You got to call back.
Okay.
Back in about a half an hour. We'll give you more time. So, Mike Rutkin's number is
423-4209.
One more time. Give me the full number.
423-4209. I have an answering machine on the phone, and I will call people back if they want to leave a message or question or comment or whatever.
Let me make the last, because you guys are going to have a last go around here. Can you make your final statements, and can you also say, get some resources for people to call for those who, for example, are more interested in a, it sounds to me like there's two different positions, a more militant position and a more let's build consensus through letters and education type position, and maybe both of you could give different places where people can call and associate themselves with either or both of those movements, if you will, or parts of the movement. Mike, do you want to begin? And
sure. Let me clarify. I'm not taking the position that people should only be involved in broad educational work and not be involved in direct action. I myself have been arrested, 35 or 40 times for direct action, nonviolent civil disobedience of one kind or another, both here in Santa Cruz and other communities that I've lived. My argument is that you can't do those kinds of actions absent some kind of broad public education about the issues. People need to understand why it is you're getting arrested, and we need to do both. So I'm certainly not attacking people that are involved in civil disobedience. I think it's very appropriate, particularly around the war with Iraq, where I do believe the majority of views in the community are against that war, and when people take those actions, I think they believe people doing civil disobedience are speaking for them through their actions. I think people who want to get further involved in whether building a broad-based anti-war movement or more specifically trying to sort of punctuate the strong feelings that we have about this war and the necessity of taking action in our country, responding, should think seriously about calling the Resource Center for Nonviolence. They're not the only group in town. I'd be also be happy that they call the coalition groups that Joe will no doubt mention.
423-1626.
I was going to say that the Resource Center for Nonviolence is 423-1626. And they're involved in both building broad-based opposition to war in general, to the war in Iraq, but also in organizing people and preparing training for people to be involved in nonviolent civil disobedience, something that I do support. And so that's one place, at least. And they also have contact with other groups. It's not a matter of simply joining that group, but finding out through them what's going on, where are demonstrations being held, what kinds of actions are happening in the community. And I would support people, again, working on different levels. It's not like there's a politically correct group here that's the right one that you should belong to. Any people do need to speak out on this issue. I do think that Congressman Farr, to end on this last point, needs to hear from this community that we do support him when he speaks out against the war, that we wish he would speak out more against the war, more consistently against it. I think that's the view that we share here in this room.
Thank you, Mike. Thank you, Mike. The numbers, again, are 423-4209 for Mike Rutkin at home and 423-1626 for the Resource Center for Nonviolence. Joe, your thoughts?
Yeah, just to piggyback on the last thing, I really do think we should, as a matter of continuous policy locally, to continue to hammer Sam Farr. Make sure to call him at least once a week. Send him an email once a week. Make sure that he's got the opinions of his constituency and make sure that those are well known.
429-1927.
That's
Sam Farr. 429-1927. Go ahead, sir.
I think on a broader level, when you look at this, I take my cue from like some of the politics of the 60s around civil rights and stuff. It's like you're gonna need movements both outside and inside the system, and I think they're both critical. You can't basically do one without the other. If you're gonna have the radicals outside the system exclusively, then it's gonna degenerate into like Days of Rage, Weathermen type stuff, which is completely counterproductive and doesn't affect policy whatsoever, except bringing down more repression. At the same time, if you rely on the Democrats just to take some kind of tepid, anti-Republican position on these issues, you're not going to get anywhere either. It's like I definitely look to the civil rights. You need a movement outside doing civil disobedience, putting pressure like in the community on the institutions that you feel are sponsoring and promoting the policies that you're opposed to. And at the same time, that kind of pressure is going to embolden and move your elected officials, at least those who are somewhat sympathetic with your position, to take stronger stands on the issues. If they don't see that support in the community, if they don't see people out there agitating, they're not going to be inclined to take any kind of a strong position. And this is kind of like the crux of where I think, at least with the letter writing, disagree with Mike in terms of like looking to Sam.
Your last comment.
Well, looking at Sam Farr as like a leader of the peace movement, I think I really want to reiterate, I think he's played out at this point in terms of strategies. So what can we do? Yeah, pressure him. See if he can take some stronger positions on this. But in the meantime, while we still got a war and we're looking at future wars in future countries, permanent endless war against terrorism, this is a critical time for our country. So in terms of like what can you do locally, what can you do now? Check out some websites. Resource Center for Nonviolence is a good one. I want to give out their website. It's rcnv.org. There's a bunch of local activities listed there under their calendar section. Make sure you check that out frequently. The Santa Cruz Peace Coalition does a variety of things. We're trying to make the connections between not only war but other things. We were in Salinas about 2 weeks ago helping support different groups down there around farm worker issues and different things, and those are the types of connections we're going to continue to make in this community on a local grassroots level. If you want to get on an announcement list, send an email to scpc@onebox.com. That's onebox.com, and I'll put you on an announcement-only list. It's very low-trafficked, announcements only. If you want to support the troops by bringing them home or getting them out of the military, go to CCCO.org, which is the Central Committee for Conscientious Objectors. If you've got somebody in the military, you want to get out, go to GIRights.org, and there's all kind of information how you can apply for different discharges and basically keep people out of the military and get people out of the military who are already in there. If you want to do direct action, there's a great website called ActAgainstWar.org. They're making direct connections. They did the dock action in Oakland, which was brutally attacked. Yeah, for the direct action stuff, I mean, Acting Against War is the organization that, you know, called for the disruption in the financial district and shutting down the Pacific Stock Exchange in San Francisco. They've been very upfront about shutting down, like, the shipping line in Oakland that's directly involved in shipping war cargo to the troops overseas. They're going to attack, like, you know, attack is a relative term, but blockade like Lockheed Martin and whatnot, attack the corporations who are profiting off this. So actagainstwar.org, GIRights.org, CCCO.org, and of course locally, santacruz.indymedia.org, all kind of stuff posted there about what's been going on and what you can do to get involved.
That's a whole bunch of stuff, and if you want more information about that, actually Leslie's going to be talking a little bit herself in a moment, but Mike Rockin's about to leave. Mike, are you any chance of introducing a resolution to City Council that would say support Amy Courtney and the other Oakland Police Department victims who were nonviolently arrested for jaywalking and held in jail for 20-odd hours or however long they were held?
We probably won't take resolutions about what should happen inside of other cities in California, but we will. So I will certainly be bringing back a general anti-war resolution that tries to deal with the current or the growing new context of U.S. imperialist occupation of Iraq. I'm sure that's going to be happening in about a week and a half now. And I do want to thank you for inviting me on the show.
Thanks, okay. Bob. Thanks, Mike.
And thanks, Joe, for the debate. I appreciate it.
And you're tuned to Free Radio Santa Cruz, 96.3 FM.
Keeping time, too.
And we have with us in the studio still the notorious Leslie. She's also notorious. She's not so notorious, but maybe she will become notorious as this broadcast goes on. We also have Joe Williams, Steve Argue, Leslie
Harrison.
I'm going to work on that one. Like George Harrison, but not. A little different, too. So you can call in now with more extensive comments and with more extensive questions for the three people who remain. And I'm sorry to have cut you all short, because I know I would have actually preferred to hear more, but unfortunately we had limited time with Councilmember Rotkin in the studio. And we have a call coming in. Let's see what's happening here. Hi there, you're on Free Radio.
Hi. It seems to me that the debate that I just heard really points up the difficulty of trying to talk about war without really defining what the war is. And it seems to me that the very nature of this system, what we really do realize, I think, but don't often admit, is that the nature of the system that we live under is war. It's war against everything. It's war against, you know, war against the environment, war against all peoples, including the people of the United States. It's war against us. If you poison our air and you poison our water and you poison our food and you rob us regularly of the value of our labor, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, and so on. There's a war on truth, which is represented by the media. So we have to understand who the opponents are. And it seems to me that the opponents are the corporate system of credit and debt on the one hand, and the life of the earth on the other, representing all of us and all animals, all living creatures, all our relations. And until we recognize what the nature of that war is, this this may sound very discouraging to say, but because God knows, how do we begin? Well, we begin by doing everything that we're doing, but the consciousness has to be different. The enemy is not Sam Farr. The enemy is not George Bush. The enemy is not Saddam Hussein. The enemy is a system, and how do we attack the system that is robbing us and killing us? That's my statement.
There you go. Well, thank you. We have some responses here. You want to take them on the air or off the air?
Yeah, no, I'd love to.
Which? Hello?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, I'd love to hear.
All right. Here you go. Steve, you have some thoughts on actually, Steve, you have some thoughts on that particular thing or particular?
I'd like it to be an extended comment that also deals with Mike Rockin and his letter to the editor and my response that was not published by the Sentinel. And I think it deals with a lot of those questions. I mean, to me, it's not a question of an inside-outside approach. The Democrats really aren't us on the inside, and I see it as the need to build the kind of movement that is about tearing down this system and putting up a different kind of system, a different economic system, a different political system. And we're not going to get that with a perspective that of pressuring the Democrats. We need to build a different political movement. That's why I'm with the Peace and Freedom Party. And if that has an impact on pressuring the Democrats, so be it. That's great. And I think it does at time have an impact, having people have a real alternative. But the main, that's not really what I'm interested in. I'm interested in building a movement that takes on a system that's about war, and the Democrats and Republicans are about war. And about destroying the planet for profits and all some of these things you just mentioned too.
And what we're going to do, Steve, is give you an opportunity to talk about that at greater length as soon as this call is completed. Any other comments from any of the other guests, including Leslie Harrison, who has put her butt out there on the line and will be showing up in court at a friendly municipal judge of their choice coming up soon. Any comments?
I guess the only thing that I'd like to say is, you know, I was involved in the liberation movement in South Africa back in the 80s, and I definitely think it's about putting our representatives' feet to the fire. You know, it's essential that they take really strong stands on these issues. What's happening in this country now is very similar, almost identical to what happened during the apartheid era in South Africa, and we are having our civil rights taken away from us as we speak. The Patriot Act is something that we should definitely be resisting. I'm willing to be arrested again on these issues, and I won't stop until things change.
Hear that, Police Chief Belcher. Go ahead, Joe Williams.
The nature of the war, I mean, the caller makes a good point, you know, identifying what the nature of the war is. I think this, you know, it goes beyond just a simple, you know, Democrat, Republican, Green, Peace and Freedom Party, whatever. It's like it goes beyond, like, what is the nature of the system that's currently dominating the planet and attempting to dominate it even further? So I think, you know, your caller says, okay, it's a system of credit. Yeah, I mean, there's all the system of credit and banking. I mean, that's part of it. Obviously, if they can create money by fiat out of thin air to fund all this stuff, they can have deficit spending. They pull money out of the hat, billions of dollars from war, and they don't give anything for health care. They don't give anything for education, you know, build more prisons, you know, fund the military, buy more war toys. This is the kind of thing we have to, like, you know, take aim at specifically, right at the heart of what allows this stuff to continue. When you've got a system of government that is basically unrivaled in terms of being a global power, the tendency to misuse that power is great, and exactly what you see right now. I'm not convinced that a Democrat in office would be, you know, a good caretaker of the global system. I think if somebody's going to, you know, come back, it's like watching Scoop Nisker on the local cable channel, you know, he says, wouldn't it be great if, like, you know, the United States just unilaterally announced that we resign as a superpower? You know, we just want to be an ordinary nation. I think that's what we have to look at. It's like, no, it's like with the people in power, including like the Project for a New American Century, which is Wolfowitz, Cheney, Rumsfeld, and the rest of this gang of yo-yos, wants to dominate the globe politically, economically, and militarily. They lay it out right now. This is the realm of conspiracy theory just a little while ago. Now they're laying it out in black and white. They don't care who knows because who's going to challenge them. It's up to us on an individual level to challenge these people and get Americans home from these bases. We got thousands and thousands of bases around the world in about 140 countries, and this is the kind of stuff that's just going to make us less secure in this country, and we're going to have to deal with it sooner rather than later because the repercussions are already coming home.
Does that answer your question, caller?
Well, No, but we're on the way. I would just say that less secure. Good heavens, Chomsky was on the station the other day, and he was pointing out that the United States is the most afraid country in the world. That's what all this the bullying comes from. Mm-hmm. And I would also say one thing more is to constantly the purpose of all of it. There's no such thing as we, the nation. The United States of America does not exist anymore in the sense that we are now all part of the global plantation. You have to look, the purpose of the system, and the reason I say it's war on everything, is rip off of everything and everything alive. And that's the system that we have to break down. It isn't even a matter, the United States is the corporate United States is the mailed fist of the economic system, which is the system of credit and debt, not just credit, but debt. Debt has killed more people in 1 year, according to this wonderful book by Susan George called A Fate Worse Than Debt. That's kills more people in 1 year, debt meaning poverty, than all the wars of history.
Here, here.
And just, that's the enemy. The enemy is the poverty, and then out of that comes war and nuclear and all the rest of it and so on. And it's a war on the environment because everything has to be ripped off in order to pay into the profit of the bank. And so the clarification is necessary, and then we go on doing anything that comes to our hand to do, but provided we understand what the real enemy is, and it is not a human being. Every human being is doing the best she can with what she's got to do it with. I mean, there's no such thing. There are no bad guys in this thing. It's a systemic evil which somehow has been created.
I want everyone to hear that. I am not the bad guy in this whole situation. Thank you, caller, for calling in.
What?
Thank you for calling in.
You're welcome.
Phone lines again are open, 427-3772, but right now it's time for the notorious, a much-beloved Steve Argue, the man who may have driven poor Officer David Lefebvre out of town.
Okay. You want to get that call, or? Okay.
Let's take the call here. Hey, caller, I'm going to kind of, go ahead. What's happening?
I'll hold.
You'll hold?
Yeah.
Oh, okay, well, why don't we do this? What you should probably do is... Okay, you want to hold? Go ahead and hold. Steve, you go ahead.
Okay, I wanted to respond a little bit to Mike Rockin, because he attacked me personally in this letter to the Sentinel, as well as attacking the anti-war movement. I don't know if this letter's been read by Mike Rockin in here. It's been read, okay. And I wrote a response, which, of course, was not published in the Sentinel because of their... Because of their bias against the anti-war movement and people who are about the movement and people who are about changing things, and their bias in favor of people like Mike Rockin, who are part of the system and speak out on some of these things like the war in order to give their local policies, which are very reactionary, some left cover. But I'll read a little this one part where Mike Rockin attacked me personally because Robert asked me to read that sentence. And then I'll read my response. Mike Rockin writes, "And how Mr. Argue, who spent most of last year in jail for punching a police officer, thinks he has the moral standing to criticize Mr. Farr for Farr's ostensible lack of humanitarianism requires a logic too twisted for me to get my head around." I wrote this response to the entire letter, which starts saying, Dear Editor, City Council member Mike Rockin recently had a letter to the editor published where he denounces me as having no moral standing to criticize Congressman Sam Farr. In this letter, Rockin also denounces leaders of the Santa Cruz anti-war movement as sectarian idiots for not allowing Sam Farr to speak at an anti-war demonstration of 7,000 people in Santa Cruz. Much of the anti-war movement is disgusted with Sam Farr's record. While Sam Farr has recently voted against the attack on Iraq, he also voted for the record $440 billion war budget. As schools close and money is sucked out of our communities for war, we see this vote as financial support for the terror being unleashed.
Likewise, Samfar votes for billions of dollars in support of the death squad government of Colombia, a government that kills human rights activists, unionists, and other people. In addition, many of us opposed Samfar when he voted in support of Clinton's war on Yugoslavia. As for Mike Rotkin's assertion that I have no moral standing to speak out against Samfar's policies, Mike Rotkin is being a classic hypocrite. As Rotkin knows, the incident to which he refers occurred at a protest in opposition to Samfar's support for the bombing of Yugoslavia. A mother was put in a pain compliance hold for no good reason by Officer Lefebvre. This woman was screaming in pain and holding a small child that repeatedly screamed, "Mommy, Mommy, Mommy." To end the crime Officer Lefebvre was committing, I punched Lefebvre in the nose, and the woman and child escaped. Even the City Council's own Citizens Police Review Board ruled that this police violence was excessive force that endangered the child. For Rotkin to bring up this incident is a clear indication of how Mike Rotkin always tries to make the victims into the criminals. As a City Council member, Mike Rotkin should be trying to curtail police abuses instead of justifying them. I, on the other hand, am not a pacifist in the struggle for justice, and I am not ashamed of taking direct action to stop the battery of a woman and stopping the terror being inflicted on a small child. Mike Rotkin, in questioning my moral standing, should be questioned for his support for police violence against anti-war protesters and his support for the Santa Cruz law that makes sleep illegal for the homeless at night. So that was my response. Of course, the Sentinel didn't publish it, but now it's gone out on Free Radio Santa Cruz, because Free Radio is not corporate-owned.
Caller, you waited patiently throughout what I think was an important statement by activist Steve Argue, who also was a city council candidate in the last election. What's happening? How are you doing at that end? Are you still with us?
Yes, I'm still here.
Hang on a second. Let me turn you up. Say again?
I'm here.
Oh, good. Okay.
Robert, it's Roxanne again.
Oh, hi, Roxanne.
I'm glad I waited because I knew what Steve had to say would be very, very, you know, timely.
Uh-huh.
And it actually falls right into with the call that I was going to make to you.
Mm-hmm.
I thought it was interesting that the question that I asked about your inappropriate questions
mm-hmm.
about city council was immediately picked up by Mike Rotkin as the downtown ordinances. I never said those words, and I never alluded to that. In fact, what I was alluding to was the way they bastardized democracy in the city council meetings by having people arrested, by intimidating them, by not allowing them to speak if they've spoken the week before, by constantly making up new rules on the spot. And I thought exactly what Steve just said. In fact, your other guest said, well, I don't think that we should come down on city council for what they don't do locally. We should support them for what they're willing to do with regards to peace. But the problem is that they have no standing. They really have no clout because of what they're doing locally. And by promoting the police violence, by never listening to the people that come in front of them and have said, I've had this terrible experience. The people that are experiencing police brutality, that are experiencing all of the midnight arrests and things, they might as well be being stormed by stormtroopers in a dictatorship. They're living a different life than the rest of us lead. They're never safe. So I stand by my statement that our city council, while somewhat impressive, really, unless they change the way they deal with people, the people that they don't like, the people they think talk too much, the people that smell, the people who catch them being hypocrites like Steve, the trouble is what it's all out season on those people. They can't handle it. I'd also like to make another comment. I study people's body language a lot and their speech patterns, and I thought it was very interesting that when Mike had to defend city council, he started all of his lip-smacking, repeating himself over and over with the same statements, exactly the way he acts in city council, the filibustering that we always used to go blah, 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 blah to. While he was talking on national issues, he actually sounded like a statesman. But the minute he had to, if you replay the tape and listen, he had to talk about his role and city council's role in local politics, he started smacking his lips, he started stuttering, he started saying the same things over and over. So I think that's a very telling thing. And Mike, if you're listening, you know, you're not off the hook. I don't care how much you do for peace, until as a human being, you will sit up in your bully pulpit and make sure that everyone is given a fair chance. You're a nobody to me.
Stay on the line with us, and Joe is going to, I think, a comment or two. At least he was nodding. Hang on, maybe he sees this total. Yeah, go ahead, Joe, your comment.
Well, I tend to agree with the caller. I mean, just to point out the Peace Coalition's involvement in front of the city council, I mean, in terms of having, you know, time cut short, you know, getting the parents, they're not even listening, and whatever legislation they ran through, there's all these parents that they were going back on the bureau, which is why they strive so hard for unanimity, and you're not going to let any member of the public, you know, shatter that unanimity. You know, a member of the Peace Coalition got up, it was not me, but another member got up and called the Downtown Ordinances an Ashcroftian Class Act. And I remember that specifically because Mike Rotkin took serious offense to it at the time and actually publicly berated this member for making comments like
and
that.
And probably berated the person without giving him an opportunity for the right to reply.
Right. No, of course, no rebuttal allowed. I think, yeah, you hold people accountable for what they do and what they don't do. I think that on a local level, the caller is right. You know, in terms of, like, describing Rockin as having no credibility, he's like a nobody on this issue locally. I think people who are paying attention locally kind of know that. But once again, just to reiterate, I think on, like, these national issues, people outside of Santa Cruz, like, aren't aware that how repressive our local government is and how repressive our local police department is. And they can go to SantaCruzIndyMedia.org and, like, figure it out pretty fast. But for those that don't, on a national level, Santa Cruz is this hippy-dippy, liberal, progressive, whatever. And I think, you know, like Christopher Crone did very, very masterfully, get these types of issues and get play in the national media, I think, is fine. And I don't think that is counterposed in any way against holding them accountable for their repression locally.
Although it should be said that it insofar as they solidify their position through getting national prestige, it enables them to continue their local repression. So there is a downside to that. And also, I want to point out that, interestingly enough, the first time a member of the Peace Coalition spoke at City Council that I remember in a particular instance was when Susan Zeman tried to speak at Oral Communications on March 13th, I think it was, maybe it was March 12th of last year. And when Crone cut her off, Rotkin wasn't on the council at that time, but it was mostly the same council, and I don't think Rotkin would have objected to this. When Crone cut her off without even letting her speak and actually implicitly threatened her with arrest, you may remember, Roxanne, I raised my hand briefly, you know, you're acting like a bunch of fascists, at which point I was arrested, held in jail for 5 hours, and then later on, of course, these bogus charges were dropped. So it's ironic, of course, that they show the kind of fascist-like activity that they engage in under the pretext of maintaining order.
Especially since we all live in America. To me, this is expressly against the things I was taught as a child that America stood for. And I'm childlike in demanding that keep happening. Granted, the world doesn't know that we have a bunch of fascists for city council, but the problem is that all the energy that's spent on issues that have nothing, well, I can't say that peace doesn't have anything to do with Santa Cruz, so I'll take that back, but it means that locally they still are not doing their job while looking great nationally. We can't stop that, but it's important for us to let them know in every way, every day, that we understand that they are only promoting an image, that they are not peaceful people, that they are not all-inclusive people. And quite frankly, you know, given the same power as Saddam, I have no doubt they'd take it if they could. I watched the power being taken at city council in, you know, in an illegal way, but you can get away with it. But I feel if Tim Fitzmaurice or Mike Rotkin could get away with silencing you on their own, they would. It's just that they have policemen for German Shepherd dogs to do it.
And they've done it. I mean, they've done it.
And that's the way our country is going. So while we're so worried about what's happening to a company or a country like Iraq, that they're under grave repression, our country is moving more and more towards that while distracting us with this supposed liberation of Iraq. So, as I said, I'm not going to put down that our local city council is speaking out against the war. I won't put that down, but I also understand why they're doing it. The same reason that Sam Farr is right now putting, you know, the bill through for medical marijuana. While his constituents are furious with him, he's putting through a touchy-feely thing that everybody is for. So, without a real great risk to himself. You know, I guess it's just really important to me that people let people know that even though they're doing good on one hand, we recognize the evil that they perpetrate in their everyday lives.
Steve has a response to that. I just wanted to say really quickly that even on the peace side, we didn't get a straight answer from Rotkin about why they didn't press this peace resolution.
You never will, because he's a master of vortexing.
Now, actually, yeah, he's pretty good at that. And I will say that Emily Riley did call back in response to my question, which is, you know, why the hell didn't you introduce an emergency legislation to call for an out now for the troops? And her answer was, I didn't think of it. But at least she had the courtesy to call me back, although, you know,
I watched the town hall meeting where they put off making the decision.
And then put it off the next day as well.
But they knew that it would be put off the next day. I mean, it was even brought up by...
Kennedy.
Oh, I can't remember who. The guy with the glasses.
Porter? Ed Porter?
Yeah, Ed Porter said, well, what difference it was brought up that they felt that it would have more power if it was passed unanimously.
Right, so Kennedy voted against it. Thank you.
Right, Kennedy brought that up, that it would. That he felt it would be better than just voted on by a quorum. Ed Porter said, well, even if we show it to everybody tomorrow at the meeting, there's no way that they are going to be able to. There's nothing on the agenda to vote on it. So it was already decided that it was going to be put off 2 weeks, and I believe Kennedy did that on purpose.
Yeah, he had a longer piece of resolution he wanted. He was going to be out of town.
He always has to get
his
big fat 2 cents worth in, you know.
And his picture is in the front page of the paper today, if you want to go take a look.
Well, what would I want to do that for?
Well,
he's exactly the same as Rotkin, perpetrating evil locally while looking great globally. I mean, I don't participate in anything that the Peace Resource Center does because of his involvement.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I feel it's poisoned.
Steve's got some comments. Do you want to stay on the line, or do you want to take them off here?
Either way, however you want it.
You got something you wanted to respond to, Steve, or do you want to just...
Either way.
I tell you what, we're going to call back again, Roxanne, if you got something to reply to.
Thanks,
you're welcome
Robert.
To call again.
Bye-bye.
Go ahead, Steve. Well, I think we may have gotten some of the reply to why there wasn't a resolution passed this week out of what Rotkin said about how now we have to educate people about the occupation, you know, and the fact that he was not so sure that the majority of people around here are opposed to the occupation, whereas in his thinking more people were opposed to the war. And this city council is not a city council about putting its neck out on national issues where there isn't broad support. You know, they can get involved in medical marijuana and opposed to the war, this particular war, but they don't get involved a lot of times take for instance, right after 9/11, the invasion of Afghanistan, we didn't see the kind of response there should have been from the city council on that. And I think that's part of the answer in terms of why they postponed it. And right now, we're also dealing with people like Mike Rotkin getting involved in these national issues, and I think misleading people with the kind of thought that is mainstream, the mainstream thought of about the anti-war movement is that we will make everything better if we elect a Democrat next election. And it's the Democrats who go to war, they're warmongers and just as much involved in the war. Actually, the vast majority of the Democratic Party voted for the appropriations for this war, voted for this war, and we have to realize that we have to not look towards the Democratic Party, as Mike Rockin is a Democrat, as Sam Farr is a Democrat, and has supported just about every war that's come across him. We have to build an alternative, and that alternative is the anti-war movement in the streets that educates and takes direct action and does things like that. And I think also a political opposition, which we're building with the Peace and Freedom Party, which has 80,000 registrants in the state of California and will be on the ballot in the next election. And I'm probably going to be running against Sam Farr in that election a year and a half from now in order to raise broader political issues of why I'm opposed to imperialism, why I'm opposed to all U.S. wars, and why capitalism is part of what breeds these wars, is what's destroying the planet and doing all these things, that we need a real change, a much bigger change than, you know, a vote now and then from someone who's under pressure. We want people who really believe in making changes in office, like Galloway in the Labour Party in Britain, who stood up and said the best thing for British troops to do and to do in Iraq is to refuse to fight.
And resist illegal orders.
And resist illegal orders. Mm-hmm. And that's the kind of leadership that we really need, not the Sam Farrs or the Mike Rockins.
Even though his party, what's his name? Who's the Führer in there in Britain, the leader? Blair was a member of his political party. He stood up against him. We don't see Democrats. I haven't.
Resignation.
Yeah. There have been a number. Well, I don't know if there have been mass resignations. I mean, how many people have resigned in... I haven't heard about that. Have you heard about any? I've heard of any MPs resigning. Have you, Steve?
Resigning from the Blair administration, there were.
Oh, from the administration, but
I don't know about MPs. I would say that would be the wrong move, to resign as an MP.
Right.
To stay in and keep speaking out.
Did you have any comments on anything that's been said, Joe? You're sitting there with your sectarian idiot T-shirt. There was a caller who called in a moment ago, and you kind of, Steve was speaking. If you want to call back, feel free to do that. We can pick up your call. I've got some interesting stuff I want to read on the Rosenthal case, medical marijuana and its trials and tribulations in the San Francisco courts. And, of course, we should think about the trials and tribulations here in the Santa Cruz courts. That's where we have some power and some impact. That is to say, we have a county board of supervisors and a sheriff's office which refuses to give guidelines to medical marijuana people. We have a city council which essentially has zoned out and criminalized all clubs but Wham. But before we go into that, here's a call on probably the previous issue. Hi there, you're on Free Radio.
Oh, hello, Robert. This is Louie.
Hey, Louie.
Hey, how you doing?
You are a Green Party guru, if I'm not mistaken, Louie.
Oh, my God.
Are you one of those sectarian idiots we've heard about?
I'm going to have to deny that charge. Unfortunately, I turned on the radio a little too late this morning to hear the Rock and Williams exchange. But I did want to comment on a couple of things that I did hear at the end.
By the way, this will be rebroadcast. I'm not quite sure when, but I think that we might be able to get Skidmark or the V-Man to turn it into a computer gabuga and have it rebroadcast later so people can catch it in the wee hours. Go ahead.
Okay, great. Uh-huh. I just wanted to just talk briefly about the whole strategy thing. You know, apparently Mike doesn't believe that it's appropriate to pressure our representatives by visiting their office. And is this the sort of thing that he was saying?
He didn't say that. How would you describe it? I don't think he actually took a position on that. In fact, he might have even said it's okay. He just talked about educating people through writing letters to the paper and commending him on his good votes, and he was giving him a platform. He was sort of silent on that issue. Yeah, he didn't criticize it. Mm-hmm. I think he backed off. He apologized for calling Joe and Paul Franklin and perhaps others sectarian idiots in this letter to the Sentinel.
Mm-hmm.
He didn't apologize for his comments to Steve Argue, as far as I'm aware.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, he didn't say anything particular. He kind of, you know, he tried to. He's I'm one with the rest of you. I agree that we have to use different kinds of tactics. I support. He did say he was arrested many times. What I should have interrupted him to ask was, when was the last time, Mike, that you were arrested?
Mm-hmm.
And I think it was at least a decade ago. I could be wrong, but I think it was long ago. Anyway, go ahead.
Well, yeah. Well, I haven't been arrested recently myself. But,
well, get to it, Louis.
I guess I haven't been trying hard enough.
Mm-hmm.
But the idea about pressuring the congressman. Now, Sam, of course, was one of the 12 who voted against the money for the war. And that's a great thing. And
on the first vote. We don't know how he voted on Saturday. It was just a voice vote.
Okay.
Go ahead.
I'm talking about the recorded vote.
Right.
House 1559, I think, was the House rule, and they voted the $80 billion or whatever it was.
Yeah, and then it came back to the House yesterday on Saturday. I was scanning all over the Internet trying to find out. All I could find out was that there was a voice vote that passed it, and that essentially makes it law once Bush signs it. But I don't know, you know, whether he was in the chamber, whether he shouted, "Not me!"
A voice vote?
Yeah, there was a voice vote for the final version that came back from...
That's very surprising that they would go to a voice vote on the final vote.
Pretty chicken shit, if you ask me.
Yeah. No, where's the accountability? Where's the paper trail? So, anyway...
This is where we need a parliamentarian, Louis, who can tell us, can a member of Congress object?
And perhaps I'm wrong about that, but...
No, it wasn't the final house.
Anyway, as you know, the Peace Coalition did publicly thank Sam for his vote, as did many other people.
Yeah, I did.
And that was appropriate. But the reason, what everyone has to remember is, the reason that he voted that way is because he got overwhelming support for that position from his constituents.
Now, Joe Williams waffled on that issue when it was brought up. He said he didn't know why Sam voted that way.
Okay, well, I heard a few days before the vote, I think it was his office, reported that they had received more than 8,000 letters.
8,400 letters.
Pardon?
8,400.
Yes. On that issue, 99% of them supported the anti-war position, and that was the reason why he voted that way. So obviously the pressure is very effective. I was in San Francisco yesterday for the march and rally, and after the march and rally, a number of us, about 150, went up to the Fairmont Hotel to greet Nancy Pelosi.
Go, Louie!
Yes, it was quite. It was great. It was a great little protest. It was organized by Global Exchange and Code Pink for Peace. And not surprisingly, because she is active in both organizations, Medea Benjamin showed up, and there was a protest on the street in front of the Fairmont.
People got arrested, or?
No arrests. No, it was just a public...
Use of the First Amendment.
An informational picket, I guess you might say, you know, and...
They should have called the Oakland police to take care of it.
Yeah. Well, the SF police showed up, and they tried to shoo us off the sidewalk, but we stood our ground, and they wanted to put us in a designated protest zone across the street.
Mm.
You know, they like to do this sort of thing.
And designated, yes.
But they backed off when we asserted our rights to stand on a public sidewalk.
I hope you didn't sit down within 14 feet of the building.
No, they didn't have any rules like that, apparently.
Oh, dear.
Nobody trotted out that sort of
thing. They didn't end up with the Rotkin rules here in Santa Cruz, I guess.
Well, anyway, let me just give you a little brief story here. So the... There were a whole large number of us, and maybe 150 to 200. One paper reported 150. The Mercury, I think, reported 200. And we... by the way, Nancy Pelosi was being honored by some organization called the Global Security Alliance or something like that for her work in favor of environmental issues and for... opposing nuclear power or something. I can't remember. It was so ridiculous that they were giving...
The Alan Cranston Peace Prize? Is that what...
Yeah, that's... Thank you. It was the Alan Cranston Peace Prize. Let's not forget who Alan Cranston was. He was one of the Keating Five, right? Or one of the... whatever they called themselves, who were involved in that whole scandal with the savings and loans.
SNLs, yeah.
Yeah. That's Alan Cranston. So she was giving an award named after this crook.
Well, Cranston had some good peace votes early in his career.
He did. He did. Mm-hmm. You know. But, I mean, you know, he certainly...
Mike Rotkin had some good votes early in his career.
Peter Coyote, of all people, was present at the awards ceremony, and I don't understand that. I thought he was better than that. And Pierce Brosnan, 007 himself, was going to be present there also. So, the little rally we had on the street was quite excellent. We had lots of chanting and people spoke. Medea, of course, spoke, And she had purchased a ticket to go inside because she's, the point was she had been denied access to Pelosi in Washington.
Now explain who Medea Benjamin is for those who don't know.
For a week. Medea Benjamin is a longtime peace and justice activist. She is the co-founder of an organization called Global Exchange in San Francisco. They do take people on reality, so-called reality tours around the world, in which people are able to learn something about the other countries of the world, not as tourists, but as students, so to speak.
She's also was a candidate for the governor and the, what, Green Party?
Yes. In let me get my years straight now. I guess it was in 2000. No, it was in 98, I think, that she ran against Boxer for, not Boxer, against Feinstein for the Senate as the Green Party candidate. She's been involved with many issues, public power, sweatshops. The Global Exchange is known for its work against sweatshops.
And she hasn't been afraid to get out there and protest. I know she's, hasn't she been barred from airlines as a terrorist or had been interfered with? Or?
Boy, if that's so, I don't know how she gets back and forth across the country.
Well, I don't mean barred. I mean
she
said,
travels a lot.
And I could be thinking of some other Green Party person that they kept off a flight, or even our own Mark Halfmoon, who was held up for a day in the airport. Anyway, go ahead.
I don't know. If I were the administration, I would think twice about barring Medea from doing anything. She would quickly turn it to her advantage.
So this was a protest up in San Francisco in front of the Fairmont Hotel?
Yes. Let me tell you what happened. Mm-hmm. So she purchased a ticket to go to this award ceremony for $250, and then asked, well, when can I speak with Nancy Pelosi? And she was told, well, that's not the format. That's for the high rollers.
Oh, ho.
Oh, their quote, their words.
Uh-huh.
So she went in, and the protest, we left before she reemerged. So I still haven't heard what the upshot was. But the whole point of this is that, by the way, our own Stephen Zun is here, spoke at the rally.
Mm-hmm.
And also Daryl Cherney played us a little song. So it's extremely entertaining.
What about you? Did you do any singing there, Louis?
No. Chanting and that sort of thing. Lost my train of thought here.
You were talking about Medea Benjamin, the protest up there.
Yeah.
Kind of giving us an update.
So here's Pelosi, right? She's the Democratic leader of, the minority leader in the House, and she voted for the money. That was the whole point of this protest.
Mm-hmm.
She was not one of the 12 who voted against the money. And the protest, why do we do these public protests? To put pressure on our people, on our elected representatives, and say, are you with George Bush or are you with us, your constituents? San Francisco is arguably the most anti-war, pro-peace city in the country at this point. That's consistently where the demonstrations are, and even in the rain yesterday, 5,000 to 10,000 people showed up at the Civic Center, and it was soggy, but it was very spirited.
And I want to say that you also do the same here in Santa Cruz at the town hall meeting. You wrote two speeches. One of them was delivered by Jeff Shuey. One was delivered by you and by Cassandra Brown.
Mm-hmm.
And in those speeches, you didn't draw back from drawing the links between what the city council was doing locally and what it was doing internationally, or what it wasn't doing internationally around the peace movement. I guess you're trying to commend them at the same time, swat them for, that's a little too mild for my taste, but point out that the Citizens Police Review Board destruction, the elimination of public spaces downtown. I don't remember all the details, but you raised three or four or five different issues in Jeff Shuey's speech when he spoke at the town hall meeting on Monday.
Yes, well, that of course is another issue that needs to be we need to keep pressure on about these local issues. Yeah, specifically what I spoke about was the defunding of the Santa Cruz Civilian Police Review Board.
Mm-hmm.
In light of the abusive behavior of the Oakland police.
Mm-hmm.
They have a police review board, and hopefully they'll look into this whole debacle. But we don't know. But the fact is, Santa Cruz no longer has a functioning police review board.
Right.
And that is a problem, and that needs to be corrected.
Oh, don't worry. The city council has given half the budget to Bob Aronson, who's taking care of it all.
Right. Mm-hmm. Okay. With no public input, I assume.
Well, you can always call Bob and chat with him if you'd like.
So what has happened here is that the Santa Cruz City Council has removed the legal channel for a citizen, a civilian to put in to give his or her opinions about this sort of thing, and forced us to go outside, right, of the system. So, mm-hmm. Well, that's where we go. So, anyway, just to reiterate my point here is that public pressure is the only way that these things happen. And if that has to be a demonstration in the streets, well, that's so be it. And
let me ask you a question. I got you on the line, Louis. Maybe turn up the heat on you for a moment. You go to Green Party assemblies regularly. I guess the next one is tomorrow at 7 o'clock, right?
That's correct.
And the Loudoun Nelson Center, open to the public, right?
Mm-hmm.
You don't have to be a Green Party member to come. You have to be a Green Party member to vote. And you have to guess have been to 2 meetings in the last 6 months or something.
Yes.
I noticed how they tried to exclude some of us from voting at the last meeting, but not without complete success. They weren't able to do that. I note that while you're talking about working outside the system, because there is no really effective way or even slightly effective way to work locally within the system, unless you're giving a resolution that the council happens to agree with before it starts, there seem to be members of the Green Party, such as Mayor Fitzmaurice and some of his stalwarts in the Green Party, who are pretty much determined not to work outside the Green Party, or seem to be interested in thwarting efforts to work outside the Green Party. What advice would you give to activists who want to see stuff done? Would you suggest they go join the Green Party and try to change this? When you have this extraordinary consensus process, which gives someone like Paul Franklin a veto. I mention his name because he opposed several resolutions at the last Green Party assembly. I'm not putting you on the spot with respect to him, but I'm saying there is a process there that makes it difficult to get the Green Party to support local activism. Isn't that true?
That is true. Yes, I do encourage people to become involved with the Green Party or the Peace and Freedom Party if they choose. I think both are worthy of support.
Although I keep saying...
We do have a consensus process that does tend to make things rather more difficult to get past, but that's in the interest of, you know, unanimity or near unanimity. That's what we want to do. The problem with the whole majority rule thing is if you win with 51% of the vote, then almost half the people don't agree with what you're doing and they won't support it. So that's why we go with the consensus.
And yet it has a conservative bias in many cases now because it allows the status quo to continue as it is.
Yes, right. Yeah. Now, it is, of course, it is possible. We do go to a vote when we feel it's, you know, if someone wants to push it to a vote, we'll go there and get the supermajority 80% and pass a resolution.
Which is still conservatively biased, obviously, because 20% can block resolutions. As, for example, they blocked endorsement of the peace vigil downtown, which you, by the way, supported. I want to thank you for your vote on that.
Yes. The system is problematic, but then people are operating this system, and, you know, people are, if there are no problems, then obviously no people are involved. It's just the nature of human nature.
I'm just wondering about the process for working this out again. I mean, I know that, for example, a particular problem I had was that HUF, Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom, which is an organization that's met pretty regularly for the last 13 years, was suddenly excluded from the Peace and Justice calendar. And it took us a lot of lobbying to get back onto the calendar. I had to engage in personal confrontations with Paul Franklin, saying it's censorship and so forth. And now I look again and at the Santa Cruz Comic News, and I find HUF has again been excluded from the Peace and Justice calendar. And I'm wondering, you know, are there bureaucrats in key positions who can essentially do what they want in these organizations and essentially marginalize people who are on the left of these groups, or is there some real process within the Green Party, within the Peace and Freedom Party, within other groups that will enable people to, you know, I don't know, to secure some basic rights and, you know, get some activism done, I guess is sort of my frustrated cry here.
Well, again, I would encourage everyone who's interested in these issues to get involved with one or the other of these parties. If you don't want to go the party route, that's perfectly understandable.
I love parties,
Well, as we say in the party, it's the Green Party. Everyone's invited.
All right.
And we would like to, you know, more people working on these things is better. That's my opinion. And if we have more people, we won't have... You'll be able to get your supermajorities that will override the concerns of perhaps the more we might characterize them as the more conservative.
Unless Fitzmaurice trots his friends into the meeting, and then, you know, what do you do? I mean,
well, what is the challenge here? Is to mobilize support. You know, get the people who agree with you to show up, and then you can, you know, get your agenda, move your agenda forward. And I don't know any other way to do it. Right?
Joe Williams says mob rule.
That's what we do with Sam Farr, right?
We
mobilize public opinion, and, you know, we know everyone agrees with us.
Let me ask you about Sam Farr.
And then we put the pressure on Sam. Sam does what we want him to do.
Maybe. I mean, he did one thing, but we asked him for 8 different things.
Yeah.
Or 7 different things, and he did one of the 7.
Right.
Which was good. I'm glad he did. Actually, but he hasn't come out against the war, and he hasn't come out. I mean, he hasn't come out for withdrawing the troops, ceasefire, and the bombing.
He's got a long way to go.
So my
no
question to you is: you and I were there on Wednesday. Should we come back to him again? Should we be wasting our time with this clown? Where does the peace movement go from here, Louis? Aside from up to San Francisco, which sounds like a pretty good idea, actually.
Part of the thing is to sort of regroup and to get ready for the, I mean, many of us have been involved with this for some time, and me not as long as others, but it is a long haul thing. It's a constant thing. So is to get more people out and education. Mike Rotkin's right. Education is a constant necessity. We constantly have to be educating.
Rotkin alert. Argue has a question. Steve Argue here has a comment. A question for you.
Well, I wanted to say one thing that's been going on are the Peace Friday events that Louis's been very involved in down on the corners of Ocean and Water, which are, I think, are important to keep up in terms of visibility of the anti-war movement and opposition to the occupation now. There's a number of things, developments that are happening right now in Iraq that are showing that the conflict is going to continue there with the U.S. occupation. There's a recently formed group called the Iraqi Liberation Front, which is a coalition of forces, includes people from Saddam Hussein's military, as well as volunteers coming in with a pan-Arabist view in terms of opposing the U.S. occupation of Arab land. There's also Kurds who are now being pushed around and have been pushed around by the U.S., and opposing Kurdish control of the Kurdish city of Kirkuk because of Turkish opposition to that. The Turkish government has had problems. They've actually carried out genocide against the Kurdish population in Turkey, and they're very afraid of an independent Kurdistan in Iraqi territory. And they don't want the Kurds to have control of Kirkuk because it joins areas where there's very rich oil wells that would be an economic pillar for an independent Kurdistan. And the U.S. has taken the side of Turkey on this, I think partly because the U.S. wants to grab those oil wells as well, and other reasons as well. And I think we need to take the side of the Kurdish people and take the side of the Iraqi people in general in opposing the occupation of their land for the privatization of oil for the oil monopolies. And some of those issues may be a little more complex than opposing the U.S. going in there in the first place, and it's going to be an ongoing thing. But I think a lot of people understand that the people of Iraq have the right to run their own country without the U.S. being involved there, and I think casualties are going to continue to come home, and our movement is going to be an ongoing thing.
Yes, absolutely. No, you're completely right. And, you know, in a way, this war has been an opportunity for, yes, it's been a horrible tragedy for the people of Iraq and for the misguided American soldiers who think they're going over there and doing the right thing. But it's also been an opportunity to educate the public and to, the discussion around this is quite remarkable, I think, that all of these issues are now in the mainstream press, and you'll see opinion papers, not as many as I would like, but you'll see opinion items written by people on the left that find their way into the mainstream press. And in these issues, you can say empire now. right? The sort of mainstream columnists are using the word empire.
Well, so are the right-wingers, though, unfortunately, because they have an empire.
Yeah.
I mean,
right,
that's
no, but it's out in the open. It's exposed this whole nasty system that we call capitalism or imperialism, you know? And so, yes, it's a much bigger issue than the war in Iraq. But that has crystallized this whole thing, and it's an opportunity for us to educate and bring more people to this realization that the entire system is corrupt and it needs to be replaced.
I also want to tip my hat to a certain Lockheed inspectors. One of them looked surprisingly like you yesterday.
Yeah.
Who I guess it was the day before yesterday, who trotted up to Lockheed at the end of Empire Grade Road, had a little theatrical dialogue with six people behind the fence, and I guess we had, 10 or 15 deputies and five or six squad cars from the sheriff's office. But, you know, it's true. I mean, we were a little concerned you were denied access without possibly asking President Bush to, you know, provide you with some air cover, but apparently that didn't happen.
Yeah.
but my question...
We were joking afterward. After we were denied access, of course, what happened when the... when the inspectors went to Iraq, they were granted access to wherever they wanted to go, right?
Well, there were troops on the border, though. You didn't bring your troops with you, Louis.
No, we didn't.
I was thinking of, you know, maybe mobilizing some Hell's Angels, or yes,
mm-hmm.
They wouldn't be the right group. Probably another group would be better.
Yeah, we didn't have that threat. You know, the iron fist in the how does it go?
Velvet glove.
In the velvet glove. Thank you. We didn't have the. All we had was the velvet glove, you know.
I took a lot of tape on it. I'm going to play some of it on Thursday. But my question to you is, you know, all this energy was mobilized. You did get a good media moment, and I'm sure Joe will see it all posted on the Indy Media with lots of nice pictures and a lot of good stats. People who gave very eloquent testimony, Peter Lumsdaine, a number of other folks, both at the original press conference, and then I heard some eloquent arguments between moms and these two Marines who came up with their platform saying, support our troops, and all
yes.
This sort of thing. But there are some of us who say, we look at this and we say, all the energy you mobilized for this one event, now all these people go home, and and they're exhausted. I mean, has it had an outcome that is... Obviously, it's not sufficient, but is it building in some way? Is it where does it go? I mean, the same thing I thought of with the Vandenberg business. I mean, the Vandenberg is great. You know, I like the idea of people going down there, the banners that were posted, the notion of challenging the heart of the military machine. But it ended up, maybe it was the media that did it for me because I didn't read much about it, even on Indy Media.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there it went. Months and months of organizing and you know, a week's worth of sort of a little bit of activity, and then it was... gone.
Yeah.
Is that an illusion? I mean, is there something real going on here that we should take heart in?
Well, I think so. The weapons inspection team has asked a number of questions. Their questions were not answered. They will be pursuing this and going back to Lockheed, maybe perhaps not physically in the near future. I don't know what the plans are. I'm not an organizer of that action. But a number of questions were asked. They will be recontacting Lockheed Martin. And hopefully they will continue to put the pressure on until they get some answer to their questions. And whether or not they get answers to the questions is really not the point. The whole point of this, of course, is to raise visibility about this, the fact that there is this, the largest military contractor in the world has a facility in Santa Cruz County. And so this is a way of education again. They're all opportunities for education.
And it did hit the newspapers.
It did hit the Mercury News. I read an article
and the
there.
Sentinel both. Speaking of high visibility, though, here's a quick plug for those who unveiled did the banner drop yesterday.
Oh yeah, I missed that.
Actually, it was Friday night. It was from the crane right across from the Catalyst. There was a banner that dropped that said "Stop the War." I think it was "Stop the War, Stop the Bombing." Mom, we heart you.
Oh.
And Mom, of course, is Olivia Brown Rabbit, who's done so much activism downtown, both in terms of the war against the poor, where she stood up for local people, local poor people are being harassed by the police, and again, and at the peace vigil that was eventually driven away from Cooper and Pacific, and then, I guess, reappeared at the town clock for a couple of weeks until they drove it away from there with various tickets and different forms of harassment.
Yeah.
Louis, can I ask you kind of briefly... anything planned for the Green Party assembly tomorrow that people should know about that might be on the agenda or that you might be bringing up? I know there were some resolutions at the last Green Party assembly that interested a lot of us, ranging from Well, two of them passed, I guess, surprisingly. The third one to support the peace vigil did not, but it certainly was discussed and tried. And I guess we had the resolutions against, was it against permit, concerns about citywide permit parking, which
right.
essentially criminalizes all homeless vehicles at night unless they have a permit,
mm-hmm.
if, you know, once that process goes through. And do you remember what the third resolution was?
You know, Robert, I just, my mind is
I don't
sieve, and I can't remember what we did last time, but I know it was important.
Well, I've got you on the line. I want to encourage you to forward to me that that letter, the speeches you wrote for the town.
Yes.
I will post them on the internet for the town hall assembly. I'm gonna have to run. I'll give you a quick goodbye, but I want to get a couple more people on the line.
Yeah, let me talk to if people are interested in more weapons inspections. There's one being organized in Santa Clara County, and let me quickly give you the info on this. It's going to be Tuesday, April 22nd, which I guess is a week from this coming Tuesday. So at 6 o'clock in the morning. So this is for you early rising peace activists. Mass demonstration and nonviolent direct action at Lockheed Martin in Sunnyvale, which is a major plant for them. And the contact info here is area code 415-820-9649. They have a website, of course, and it's SCPJ. Don't know what that is. Let's say it's Santa Clara Peace and Justice. Okay, I'm just guessing. Anyway, it's a way to remember it. .org/Lockheed. And again, that's Tuesday, April 22nd at 6 a.m.
All right. Well, listen, Louis, thank you. And for people who want more information about the Green Party, how can they get it?
Santa Cruz... What is our website? SantaCruzGreenParty.org.
Mm-hmm.
And that would be the best way to get
or
it.
Or come to the meeting tomorrow night, 7 o'clock, Loudoun Nelson Center.
Yes, please do.
Thank you for calling in, and maybe I'll see you there.
Well, thanks for having this discussion, Robert.
No problem.
All right, bye.
Bye-bye. You're tuned to Free Radio Santa Cruz, 96.3 FM. Call-in number here is 831-427-3772. You may also be listening to us through our internet connection at Free Radio Olympia in Washington at 91.3 FM, at Mojo Radio in Mendocino at 87.9 FM, or at Free Radio Ashland in Oregon at 87.9 FM. It's actually the PM now, but it's also the FM. In the studio with me still, in case you want to mine their fertile imaginations and wild and crazy radical spirits, Steve Argue and Joe Williams. Steve Argue had his own radio show here, but has temporarily abandoned it for work on a book and his own survival. And Joe Williams is floundering beneath the debt, but he's still here picking his... No, he's still here waiting with his sectarian idiot T-shirt to respond to all comers. No pun intended. Give a call to 427-3772. I've gotten a couple of emails. Actually, I did get an email from Robert Nahas. Robert, thanks for the... Sam Farr commentary, which you also kindly read on the air. I appreciate that. We have another caller. Hi there, you're on Free Radio.
Yeah. So where's the sectarian idiot name caller?
He's taken off, I'm afraid. You, however, can reach him at City Council at 420-5017, if you want to give him a call there. Or you can call him at home, at his home phone, at 423-4209.
You guys already had the conversation then?
Yeah, it went from 10 to 11, actually.
Son of a bitch. That's what I get for waking up late.
Well, there you are. You know, I think we're going to repeat it, but you won't be able to call him on the ear and embarrass him, although he's pretty hard to embarrass. Mike is pretty shameless.
Yeah.
He's got a smile for everything.
What do you think about Mike Rotkin, when he came into this town, being way more of an idealist and actually perhaps doing some good, and then, like, as the years have gone on, just kind of really mellowed out and became a lot more of a realist, and he's really trying to, like, work within the system now, and this is, like, this is total sellout lack.
Very much within, way...
Yeah, exactly. Like, he's, I mean, you know, the comments that he made saying that we need to embrace Farr because he is one of the few peace movement voices in Congress, and, like, I mean, I read his letter, and I read Steve Argue's response on Santa Cruz Indie Media, and, I mean, that guy... I mean, someone put the comment best. They need to pull the wool off this guy.
True. And you also should look at his votes at City Council. Is he last City Council? I mean, he was one of. Of course, they all voted the same way.
Well,
he voted for citywide permit parking, which would criminalize homeless vehicles at night through a very simple process, which is, you know, the next step in the process and likely to happen soon.
Yeah.
He voted in favor of funding for the police department.
How much money does the police department get? They get a lot, don't they?
They get 33% of the budget at least, and if you add to the fire department, it's more than 50% of the budget. I mean, let's
see. The fire department, I'm down to have a more adequately funded fire department.
Right,
but a police department that eats up a third of the city budget,
actually,
I think is a little...
I was speaking of police and Parks and Rec, where Parks and Rec also has this sort of these rangers who run around arresting campers, despoiling campsites, arresting people for being in parks after dark.
I worked for the Rangers before. Like, I'm a local kid, and I worked for the Rangers before.
Destroying flower fences at the town clock, at the peace vigil. I mean, there's a whole raft of repressive actions that Rotkin has, almost without exception, supported over the years. So that's the problem. He has this amiable face, but he is always voting for this repressive shit.
Yeah.
I mean, it's just, and you can't get him to fess up to it, you know. He will,
he's
got a faster mouth than anybody in town, man.
You personally, but he loves to manipulate the students into thinking that he's this great, like, political leftist idealist guru and da-da-da-da, when in fact, I mean, like you said, he's just been supporting all this crap for years.
Well, he looks good on national issues. See, that's the deal. And I guess Steve, you had something to say. Let me let you in here. I think Steve had a response to what you were saying.
Yeah, I'd say that whatever his views were before he took office, his,
during the first part of his terms.
I didn't really hear him doing much coming in.
Were you around during those times?
That is
20 over 20 years ago. So I'm just saying, like, in that 20 years, he's mellowed out a lot and he's sold out.
Right. But what I was going to say is his perspective. Actually, he made some clear statements when he first got elected that he was not going to try to change things now that he was in office. That everything is different once you're in office, and it comes from not really him selling out so much as never having the political perspectives in the first place, I think, of what you do when you're in office. You use that bully pulpit, you use that to try to change things, to take on things, and even if you don't get elected next time, you use it in a way that's useful. It's not, this whole idea of, he's trying to do something within the system, I'd like to see what he's trying to do. What I see him doing is the opposite.
I said that's what he encourages people to do, is to work within the system. I'm not saying he did anything. I'm saying he wants everyone else to just shut up and go along with the system.
Right, right. I'm not disagreeing with you.
I want to clarify, though, because I don't want to get,
Yeah, right on.
Yeah, but what do you think? I mean, idealist when he first started, and now he's just a realist. And it's like, okay, get a new idealist, or get off your progressive fucking
personally. Personally, I don't think it's in terms of, it depends on what your goals are in terms of realism. If your goal is to have a position for 20 years on the city council, I guess he's being realistic. He's working with the system, and he's not trying to change the system. But if your goal is to change things, there's nothing realistic about what he's doing because he's part of the problem.
He's just another career politician, and I think career politicians are the problem.
Yep.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, I was in and out of Santa Cruz in the late 70s and early 80s. They had at that time a so-called new group of people coming in that later became, you know, the old guard, and that's now currently the old guard. Marty Wormhout, John Laird, Gene Weed, the so-called progressives, and the organization SCAN, which, you know, were to some extent throughout the 80s arrayed against the merchants and the old Leask Canfield Company. I mean, there were some opposition between the two. After the earthquake, particularly if you look at analyst Celine Marie Pascal, who did a very important write-up on it, she said that the Kennedy and Rotkin and all these one-time progressives formed an alliance with the merchants to rebuild the town and essentially completely sold out. Now, I haven't heard of Rotkin and the progressives even doing much before the earthquake. I mean, I was around in 88 when, you know, they were arresting us for going to city council. They arrested us for sleeping outside their houses while people were freezing. They wouldn't expand the shelter program except when we repeatedly embarrassed them.
Yeah.
They wouldn't even establish a shelter program until one woman almost starved to death, Jane Immler, in 1985, in a fast. I mean, there's really a bad record of these so-called progressives. And
I don't even want to defend their past actions because
And answer your question, I don't know if he's... He was a supporter of rent control in 1982.
Yeah.
And he may even say...
He goes around UCSC to telling people that he was a socialist feminist when he was first elected and that he kind of, like, came to grips with the process and that, you know, just that working together and with people, like, is the most powerful thing. Like, he's just got this really interesting, like, what I think is a contradiction to him, in that he just is up there on, he's up on campus teaching classes about Marxism, which he's really good at. He knows his shit really well. I don't want to take anything away from him. He's a smart, crafty individual. Mm-hmm. But, I mean, he's just, like you guys have been pointing out, obviously, he's got some very interesting contradictions and issues that should be called on.
They're standard contradictions. There's nothing really interesting about them, really. I mean,
they're standard, okay.
I think you should call him on them. I mean, there's no question about it.
Yeah.
He may be good at teaching Marxism in some abstract sense, but he has no understanding of what Marx was about, because Marx wasn't about being a career politician.
No, I agree. I'm just saying he does one thing, and or he says one thing, and he teaches one thing, and he does another. And it's I'm done.
Hey, thank you.
Peace.
Appreciate your calling.
Yeah, no worries.
Bye-bye. Hey, it's still Free Radio, 96.3. Phone number is still 427-3772. Still lounging about in the studio, Joe Williams and the Notorious Steve Argue. And who knows, maybe you've got other people coming in, too. You never can tell. We could have you coming in, 427-3772, if you want to give us a call. Or we could have me doing some reading, what I promised I was going to do some reading on. I wanted to want to give a couple of quick announcements, too, before I run out of time. We have about half an hour left. Let's see here. You may remember Jason Pascal was the African-American spiritualist arrested for possessing milk crates downtown and reading fortunes, or I should say doing spiritual readings on the mall, currently being held in the lockup, or he was last I heard. I've attempted to get in touch with him. Looks like we've got a phone call coming in. I'll be talking more about that in a moment. Hi there, you're on Free Radio.
Hi, Robert, it's Roxanne again.
Hey, Roxanne.
I hate it when I interrupt something that you're...
Go ahead.
...a new tack you're taking, but I do want to say to the person who just called that it is my opinion that Mike Rotkin is what is known as a poser. He's someone who just wants to look like what he is, but not really live it. And I think that when you get these old men up on a campus where all the young chicks are looking up at them like they're some kind of Vietnam protester, been arrested a million times, protester, that's all he needs. He doesn't really care about coming all the way through for people who are downtrodden or who are, you know, down on their luck. And he lives a great life pretending to be what he's not. His students very rarely show up in city council. If they do, they show up there on causes that someone else has gotten them interested in. There have been a number of really sincere students who have spoken up for the homeless and, you know, but there's very few of them that really get to see their beloved radical teacher in actually in action, which is exactly the opposite of how he is. And in terms of getting reelected, that's his whole thing. You hear all the time about how it's being on city council is a thankless job. You get hardly any money for it. Well, boy, he and Scott Kennedy and whoever the woman is who's the director of Planned Parenthood, they just run back as fast as they can. They can't even wait their full two years before they're, you know, chafing at the bit to get back. Why? Because they enjoy so many perks, you know, for being in the limelight. It has nothing to do with the job they're doing. I'm very cynical about our city council. If there were room for new members to get in all the time, I might feel better about it. But Mike Rotkin, poser.
Hey, thank you, Roxanne. I think that's well put. And call back again if you want, although we're kind of running into the time crunch here. I actually brought along a thing called the Rotkin Record, and it's just a very extensive analysis of Rotkin on the sleeping ban, and it only runs through 2002. We actually got 2003, but here we got another call. I may not be able to read that. Hi there, you're on Free Radio.
Hey, Robert, Joanne, City Santa Cruz worker, SEIU activist. I've been on the radio once before there.
Excellent.
Hey, what Roxanne said is so true, especially about Rotkin. I remember when they were trying to privatize the golf course, and I got up and spoke, which Benjamin Lang spoke after me. God, the guy was so arrogant and cavalier, and, you know, I couldn't believe it. It felt like he was in on supporting this thing, and... I just don't understand why real people can't get on the city council and why it's the same faces over and over again. that, you know, they're posers is what they are, and I guess that's just, I'm just ranting and raving about that.
Can you, you're a labor person, can you tell us more about, I know I've heard some things about Rodkin's labor record, that's where I'm a little bit weak. I know he was accused of scabbing in the bus driver's strike.
Right.
He was accused of essentially negotiating for management in something involving firefighters.
Exactly. It's all true.
And this is to some extent why he was abandoned by SCAN, the Santa Cruz Action Network, which I don't have a lot positive to say about either. But, I mean, it was at least to the left of Rodkin on these issues.
It's all true. It's exactly what you said. He's, you know, he's a crooked politician, I guess is all you could really say. I know I'm biting the hand that feeds me, but I hope everybody listens to this. And, you know, you got to shove these people out of office and get some, you know, maybe it takes money to get in, I guess. You know, you got if you don't have a job, you know, or you're not independently wealthy, how are you going to get in there?
Now, wait a minute. Are you suggesting we recall Rodkin, as I used to say repeatedly? Yeah.
Sure, why not? I didn't like the way he treated me in front of the city council on this very important issue of giving up city land to a corporation to take over the golf course.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, his attitude towards, I mean, the lip smacking, all that, you know, the body language stuff the previous caller was talking about. The guy's an idiot.
Well, no, we're the sectarian idiots. Mike here is the consensus builder. We know that, right?
Poser. Roxanne's just so right on. I mean, about, you know, his little thing up there at the, he's an old man, you know, and he likes people to look up to him like he's something important.
Hey, thank you for calling, caller.
Well, thank you, Rob.
Bye-bye. Now, if there are any defenders of Councilmember Rodkin who would like to call in and clear his reputation, looks like we have another call. This could be Madeline McCall. Where are you when we need you? Hey. Hi there. You're on Free Radio.
Yeah, this is Mad John again.
Oh, no. Go ahead, Mad John.
Yeah, well, the point of it is I have never seen such hypocrites in my life. I mean, I have more respect. I go to North Carolina quite frequently because I visit someone in my family in the state hospital there. The point of it is, I have more respect for those rednecks, fundamentalists, which I hate fundamentalism of all kinds, but I have more respect for them because at least you know where those idiots stand. But these miserable hypocrites in Santa Cruz absolutely disgust me. That's all they are. Is they're a bunch of hypocrites. They're a bunch of ivory tower communists and Marxists and socialists and whatever the hell they call themselves. But they don't give a damn about the poor here in Santa Cruz.
Now, wait a minute, John. How can you say such a thing when it was Mike Rodkin who helped pass the law that made it criminal for you, a 73-year-old man, to hold up a sign downtown while you were seated saying, need money?
Yeah, well, that's just typical of their behavior.
Yeah, but we don't need your kind of beggar around Santa Cruz, do we?
Well, no, we're considered as the
persona non grata,
or as the German said, the translation, useless eaters. I respect those crazy fundamentalists in North Carolina a lot more than I do these.
Well, listen, with democracy coming, you're going to get some interesting crazy fundamentalists in Iraq, because that's what the majority is, at least in the Shiite region in the south.
Well, yeah.
This is how
you
like democracy when it shows up in Iraq.
They have really shot themselves in the foot this time, because Al-Qaeda and all kind of Islamic fundamentalists are just itching to get in there now that a secular government, I mean, talk about lies. They made people think that, you know, they were mixed up, that Hussein, who wasn't a good guy, of course, but that he was involved with the fundamentalists. And the Baathist Party, the Pan-Arabist movement, which is also in Syria, that's why probably they're the next target, are extremely secular. It's Assad in Syria massacred 20,000 fundamentalists in armed Syria quite a few years ago. They are extremely secularist, maybe because both governments were run by minorities. The Sunnis made up only about 15% or so of the population.
Gotcha.
in Iraq, and the Alawites, which are considered heretical by other Muslims, are also a minority in Syria. So they knew where their bread was buttered, these secularists. But the point of it is they were secularists. They did not tolerate any kind of fundamentalism.
Well, now, wait a minute. Mike Rodkin is a secularist, it seems. He's not pushing any